Welcome to Barry Maguire's Tales from the Trenches, real life stories of Canadian real estate investors. Learn more at www.barrymaguire.ca.
So we're going to start with multifamily. Who is at the multifamily event? Let me hear from you. Tremendous, tremendous event. I really enjoyed the energy that the 800 of you brought. 800. That was a big room. And Barry was there. Barry Maguire is a veteran real estate lawyer, and he has been doing it for now 35, you told me last night, Barry?
35.
35 years of real estate transactions here in Alberta. He knows this inside and out. He was at the multifamily, and he said, boy, there's some more things I can add to multifamily. We want to bring the speaker up with a ton of energy. Let's give it up to Mr. Barry Maguire.
Woo. Look at that, Donnie. Thank you, sir.
Enjoy, my friend.
All right, I will. So, all right, tonight's Tales from the Trenches are, again, on multifamily because I didn't want to give up this topic until we'd really given it a going over. And tonight we're switching from some commercial offers and what lenders want from you, which is what we did in September. We're moving over to the actual investor side. Lots of you folks already own multifamily properties, and I talk to lots of RAIN members, senior experienced RAIN members, who have purchased multifamily properties to say, okay, what did you do over the course of buying these properties that gave you a hard time? What bit your butt? What can you tell the rest of us that will help us as we go out and buy multifamily properties? And this is the real deal, folks. This is what the buyers of lots of units have talked to us about. So the first one is all about vacancies. You've got how many vacancies? So we've got a member who's looking to buy his first multifamily, a 36-suiter. And like lots of us, he started small, bought a townhouse in a rental pool, then bought a house with a legal suite, then bought one with an illegal suite, and then bought a couple of fourplexes, and that's like about 11 units. And the goal is 200. This took 3 years. So he knew something had to happen. He went and talked to Peter Kinch and the chaps at Dominion Lending, and he did one of Peter's pre-positioning consultations, where you go and tell Peter what your goal is, and then he tells you, financially what it's going to take. Did that and found out what he was going to take to buy his 200 units, and it wasn't going to do it buying onesies and twosies and fourplexes. So he had to get out and get going. So what do you need to do? Found a realtor who understood commercial stuff, found a lender who understands commercial stuff, and the lender or broker you use right now might be quite competent to do commercial lending. But you should ask, because some people like to stick to the residential side of it. Not everybody's a commercial lender. So ask, get yourself a commercial lender, and started looking and found a building. Found a building. It was an okay building in an okay area. Things were a little bit tight on the competition side, so there wasn't that much available. Decided to go in and look at this building, wrote up the offer, counter-offered on the price, they bargained hard. In the end, they get a deal signed. This deal is going to close in 4 months, which is a pretty long closing. Usually deals close faster than that. But that's what the seller wanted, so it's 4 months. And here's the critical factor, there were two vacancies when he signed and went unconditional. Now there's 4 months to go till he closes. 1 week before closing, the lender wants a rent roll. A rent roll is something that the seller provides. It's a list. Suite 101, Bill Jones is the tenant. It's rented to Bill and Bill's paying $1,000 a month. Suite 102, Mary Smith, and so forth. The seller fills it out, he signs it, certified to be true, and usually you get one of those when you're buying, and as part of getting your financing, the lender wants one. So at the 4 months ago, we got one. Now the lender wants it updated, as lenders do. They always want an updated rent roll. And the seller gives it to him, and...
That was me.
I was Don.
Not this deal, but 18 vacancies from two.
Yeah, Donnie. 18 vacancies a week before closing. So he says to himself.
Self?
Self? I'm going to have to work really hard to fill it up. As soon as I take possession, boy, he talks to his property manager and starts thinking about all the things he can do to get those units all rented up. And the lender says, oh, didn't you know that the money we give you is based on the revenue that your place is producing? You didn't know that? 36 divided by, or 36 take away 18 is 18, so half the suites are rented. You're going to get half the mortgage money that you think you're getting. Half. Our member says, well, you know, I've got a great manager. We're working hard. We already have plans. We're going to fill it up. Don't worry about it. Yeah, the lender says, great. And actually, when you do that, you tell us and we'll give you more money. So folks, here's another little truth about commercial lending. Once you're into a commercial loan and the bounds are set and the deal is done, commercial lenders have very little flexibility and interest in changing to accommodate what difficulties you've run into. They might be nice about it, but they're not changing to suit you. So, what happens? Our guy gets a one-month extension for which he has to pay another $50,000 non-refundable. That's always iffy, eh? Write a check for another $50,000. You got 18 vacancies. You don't know if you're going to be able to fund and close, but if you're going forward, you got to write the check for $50,000. Ooh, scares me just thinking about it. Anyway, advertises hard in his 1 month, actually 5 weeks, because it was a week to go to closing, fills up 12 of those 18. Not bad, but obviously he's still short. Still short. Now he's on to family, had a little bit of an unused line of credit, calls in all his markers to all his family people, and finally ends up filling, I think, four more units. Took 3 months. So he's able to close, but it took him 3 months to fill up four more units till he got back to the place where he started, which was two vacancies. Hard lessons about renting in a November and December market when there's already a 7.5% vacancy rate.
Barry, I bought one very similar. It was 20 suites on 82nd Knott Avenue on street.
Yes,
and if anybody knows Edmonton, yeah, that's not the coolest part of town. And it was one vacant and one guy in arrears when we got the offer accepted. And what happened is the vendor said, I'm going to cherry pick and I'm going to get all of the good tenants and I'm going to move them to some of my other buildings. So that when I got it, when it was on closing, it was half empty and the other half were a challenging profile. But to me, I'm being very polite.
That's so nicely put.
And this is exactly what happened. And yeah. Believe me, I have relationships with these banks better than a lot of people. And they said the exact same thing. Campbell, we can only give you the money based on the revenue at that point. So now my lesson is I am constantly getting an update, especially if I have a 2 month or longer closing, I'm getting a constant update from that seller to find out how many vacant suites there are, what the turnover is, et cetera. Because in essence, it's my building once that offer has been accepted.
And it's up to you to manage that end of things and to understand that can be an issue. So just as a little aside, when Don was talking about his building, he had one vacant and one coming vacant. You know, one vacant out of 20 is a 5% vacancy rate. Two is 10%. In this case, two vacant is 5.5%, which is still a lot. You pretty much, to get down to a reasonable level, you have to have only one vacant, as just a little aside. So, all right, so what did we learn out of this whole thing? Sellers quit managing once they've sold, or they proactively manage for their own benefit, like Don's situation, moving all the great tenants off to other buildings and putting junkers in there just to keep the place filled. You have to talk to your lender and understand that when you get a commercial loan commitment, it is based on revenue, not on you qualifying for a number that they're going to give you no matter what. That was a big shock to our member when he found out he wasn't getting the number that they said he had qualified for. And you can add clauses and schedules to deal with these kinds of issues. So as you are in the buying process, you have to take a look and see where and what you think the building is doing. If it's a long closing, you have to pay way more attention to this. And you have to think about this, I think, going in so that as you are ready to put an offer in, you have the kinds of clauses and schedules ready to hand after you've done an inspection and done some look-see about what's going on. Something else our member could have done is he could have done a better examination of the existing leases to see whether or not there was a whole bunch of units coming vacant in the four-month closing period. If these were just leases that expired and weren't getting renewed, that would have driven him to say to the seller, you know what, we have to talk about what's happening in the next 4 months when I can see by the leases you've given me, 18 of these suites are going to come vacant. So, those are all things you can do.
Thanks for listening to Barry McGuire's Tales from the Trenches. Get the inside scoop on real estate investing from one of Canada's foremost real estate lawyers. To print this tale, and for more valuable investing insights, go to www.barrymaguire.ca.